This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Let's begin today with an increasingly urgent question. How do you get around in Greater Boston? Today, the MBTA suspended Red Line service between JFK, UMass, and North Quincy stations, replaced by shuttle buses. The trains are now running again, for those of you thinking about your afternoon commute. Yesterday's Red Line derailment left one person injured and damaged signal bungalows, which now need to be replaced. Traffic backed up on the roads, and lift prices from JFK, UMass station to downtown Boston spiked as high as $123. Our first guests today warn us that it is gonna get worse before it gets better. Jim Aloisi is a former state transportation secretary and Mass Turnpike Board chairman. He's now a member of the Transit Matters Board and the principal of Trimount Consulting. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Jim.
Thank you for having me back.
Great to have you. And Mary Connaughton is the director of government transparency at the Pioneer Institute. And she served on the Mass Turnpike Authority Board from 2005 to 2009. Welcome back to you as well, Mary.
Thank you, Tiziana.
Now, we have a lot to talk about, but first, listeners. In a recent Boston Globe op-ed, Jim and Mary warned of the coming disruption from two major projects on the Mass Pike starting this summer. Work in the Prudential Tunnel, and then a decade-long project on the BU section of the Pike. Did you know this was coming? Are we ready? How do you plan for your commute? Are you fed up with the state of our transportation system? Give us a ring. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet at us at Radio Boston. All right, so Jim and Mary, I want to start with what might seem like a basic question. We know we have terrible traffic in Boston. Some of the worst in the country, or actually the worst by one report. Why are we doing this to ourselves? Why this massive project?
Well, the Alston project is a safety project. Anyone who drives on the turnpike there may not realize it, but they're on, when it's around here, when it's around Boston University, it's elevated. It's on a viaduct.
Mm-hmm.
That viaduct is the same viaduct that was originally built back in the 60s.
And so a viaduct is like a street
on
stilts, right?
It's an elevated portion, correct.
Okay.
And so it needs to be replaced for safety reasons. But that's the key thing to point out. This is a safety project. This is not a capacity-growing project. So the capacity of the turnpike will not expand after this project is completed. And so what Mary and I are recognizing and hoping other people recognize is that the combination of this very disruptive but necessary construction work,
okay,
plus some private sector air rights development, which mm-hmm. is happening soon, are going to combine over the next decade and maybe more to completely disrupt traffic on the turnpike. Now, some people may say it's already disrupted. It's already at peak. The turnpike is already a parking lot.
Yeah.
So whatever the word is that's worse than a parking lot
is
what the turnpike
that.
Will be.
Okay.
And what we're saying very clearly is that the state needs to commit to a vibrant rail solution
mm-hmm.
and a bus solution, but more importantly, from my perspective, keeping the Worcester Rail Line running frequently all day long.
Yeah.
And that means keeping two tracks open at all times.
Okay, so I want to get back to your prescriptions, but before we do that, Mary, I want to ask you, can you just tell people what's going to happen? What are we going to be doing?
Sure. So as Jim said, the number one thing that they'll be doing is removing that viaduct by BU.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to straighten out the turnpike there. If you think about it, it's a big, huge curve that goes by through Alston by the Charles.
Okay.
So they're going to straighten it out over the rail yards there and then maintain it at close to at grade level. Additionally, Soldiers Field Road is going to go up. It's to be elevated, so that's another creation of mm-hmm. a viaduct. And they're also going to improve the Paul Dudley White bike path there.
Okay.
So, and to do that, the plan is to reduce the number of lanes available on the turnpike from that area, which is 4 to 3, both eastbound, westbound, 24/7.
So that's two lanes total. One.
Right.
Okay.
It means work. It means speed reduction because of work zones
mm-hmm.
where people working. And as Jim said, one of the things that would be disastrous is if they actually, in that area of construction, take the Worcester line from two tracks to one track. So an inbound train has to wait for an outbound train to come out. That would be a huge bottleneck. And that's something that the MBTA just corrected because that was an issue several years ago. And I take that rail every day
mm-hmm.
and notice vast improvement.
Okay.
So going backwards at
doesn't
this
sound
time,
good.
Especially and as Jim mentioned, with the mass congestion that will be coming, now's a great time to get people addicted to the commuter rail. I mean, avoid congestion, avoid sitting in traffic, commuter rail will have a better schedule, get people to work, get people home with their kids.
Yeah.
And get them hooked on it now.
Okay. So we're already stressing out callers. Galen from Newton has called to share thoughts on this. Galen, welcome to Radio Boston. Jump on in. Tell us
thank
what you're
you so
calling
much
for.
Thank you for taking my call. Thank you very much. So I live in Newton Corner, right off the pike on exit 17.
Mm-hmm.
And every day, taking the express bus, no matter where you take it from downtown, it's about a mile, at least a mile, every single evening from like 4-6, no matter how you time it, backed up on the pike just to get to that exit, cars getting on and off. And I'm wondering, I mean, what is the solution going to be for people who live in the outer areas where the T doesn't go and where if you don't take an express bus, it's about, I don't know, an hour plus taking, say, the Red Line to a regular bus service out of, I don't know, Harvard Square or something like that to get to Newton, Waltham, et cetera.
Is it Galen? Is that
Galen?
Galen.
Yep.
So, Galen, I think there's two answers to your question. First of all, you're right in pointing out that a bus stuck in traffic isn't a real solution. If we can get to the Worcester Line and if you can get to commuter rail, the first step, we think, is getting more frequent, you know, all-day service on commuter rail. And there are three stations in Newton. I don't know if you're close to any, but that's the first necessary solution. Have frequent all-day service. Stop holding trains. We have trains sitting idle all day long at Alston. We need to keep those trains operating all day so that you have frequent service all day. Second, bus dedicated lanes or bus priority lanes, I think, are also an essential ingredient to the solution so that, as you know, every bus is carrying many, many more people than several cars with just one person driving. And so in a situation like this, one of the things I think the state needs to do and the city to cooperate with them is to dedicate priority lanes for buses, especially during peak hours. And that's the way we're going to move more people. The Governor's Commission on the Future of Transportation talked about moving more people and not vehicles. This project is going to be a great testing bed for that principle.
So, listeners, I just want to come back to you. We want to hear from you. So call in. What are your concerns? What are your challenges in your commute today? What questions do you have for our guests? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, Mary, Jim just said, you know, move more people without moving more cars. You said you want to get people addicted. To the commuter rail right now. Okay. But is the commuter rail ready to take a whole new passel of addicts? I mean, can we take the additional capacity?
Well, it has to get more equipment to be able to service the number of people that should migrate to it. But over the past few years, there have been tremendous improvements along the Worcester Line. They've replaced a lot of track. There used to be speed reductions on really hot days in the summer because the tracks would, like, expand, and it was the commuter rail couldn't go that fast.
Mm-hmm.
So they replaced about, I think, over 100,000 feet of track. They've also replaced the boards below the track. They've done work on the signalization. They've done work on getting more parking along the Worcester Line. So there've been great improvements, upgraded the signalization, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're moving in the right direction, but they just don't have enough equipment to accommodate the amount of people that should come on. Additionally, they have to be able to work on a system that will allow them to get more trains on the track at a single time. But the lead time for locomotive equipment or cars right now is about 8 to 10 years. So unless they are really think about leasing equipment or doing something really innovative, that would be really hard to implement.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
now
how
is the time.
Isn't that just a total non-starter if it's going to take 8 to 10 years?
No. It won't take 8 to 10 years to improve. Look, Transit Matters looked at this thing. With the current equipment, if it's not being laid over all day, you can get at least off-peak hourly service.
So you can make better use of our current equipment.
Right. Hourly service is in 15-minute service. I get that. But it's hourly service all day long, off-peak.
Mm-hmm.
And then you gradually begin to transition to improve that. We got to start somewhere.
Okay.
But I think what we're saying is let's start where we can start. We can start at that point, and we can improve it by doing a variety of things, buying the new equipment, but also doing things like building high-level platforms at every station so that people can board trains more quickly and their dwell times are less, and it'll speed up the trip and the frequencies.
So we're talking a lot about rail here, but what started this conversation is the fact that we're going to do some road work. So this is the whole body of transportation infrastructure in Greater Boston. Mary, you talked about the heat and the tracks expanding and contracting. We're not really known for mild weather in Greater Boston.
Right.
And it feels like we're kind of hitting this crisis point of wear and tear in our infrastructure. So I think one thing we kind of want to know is just how bad is it?
Well, the average lifespan of a bridge is about 70 years. And when you think about when all the highways were built in this country, they're butting up against that timeline. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. A lot of work has been done on improving the bridges in the state and across the country, but there's still a lot more to go.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the roadways go, they're narrow. There's not a lot of room on the turnpike to expand.
There's not a lot of give.
There's not a lot of give. And as Galen had mentioned, there's bottlenecks. Newton Corner is an enormous bottleneck, east, west. Almost any time of day, it causes backups. But there's other bottlenecks along the turnpike that it'd be really tricky to try to fix. But as Jim said, if more people could get into buses, if they used park and rides out in the suburbs and had commuter buses that people can use, just pick them up there. If they got more parking at the commuter rail station, because that's another bottleneck. If they can't park there, they could partner with private entities to lease out spaces. But the Framingham lot's pretty much full by 7:15. If you look at all inward, it's about the same time. Some lots are full a lot earlier than that.
Yeah.
So we have to think about how we can make it more convenient for people to use commuter rail and get them off the road during this time of construction, because what will happen is the turnpike gets congested.
Mm-hmm.
People use Waze or other devices to figure out ways around the traffic, but then all the side streets back up.
Yeah.
And then there's congestion everywhere, and what does that do to the environment?
More problem. That's right. So listen, our lines are backed up, so I want to get a couple of callers in. Let's take two. Let's listen to Tony from Bourne. Tony, what's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Great to listen to the show. I am a commuter. I work at Logan Airport in Boston, and I live in Bourne. So there are a few ways I can commute. One of the ways is a commuter rail, but I think the biggest prohibition isn't so much service, it's the price. They just increased the fee of a monthly pass to about $426 a month, in addition to paying for parking at the rail center. And it's cheaper for me to drive my plug-in hybrid and park in Boston than it is to take the commuter rail. So why would I add it? The commute does add an extra hour to my commute each way. So I think, they need to work on price, first of all. And maybe even if you work on the rail in the stations, like Boston, in my opinion, should be free. Because then if you're not paying for employees, you could take the rail free and it would increase ridership and save the money on the road.
Tony, thanks for your call. So Tony's feeling the pinch of price. Let's hear what's on Melissa's mind from Ashland. Melissa, what made you call in?
Well, I really feel like no one's considering the helplessness of the consumer. And that would be, all of us commuting, sitting there for hours. And yet the MBTA has the gall to go ahead and do these construction projects and doesn't consider anything that the residences of the area are going through. I hear these wonderful consultants talk about the need for, these kinds of platforms or additional trains, but yet they go ahead with this huge construction on the pike and expect us to sit there for 2 or 3 hours. It's unacceptable to not consider the residences of Boston before undergoing these huge projects.
Melissa, thanks for your call. So, Jim, we heard two kinds of frustrations there. There's the price frustration, and there's that helplessness of sitting there and not being able to get anywhere.
Let me respond to the last caller first, which is to say, look, first of all, this is not the MBTA doing this project. This is the Mass Highway Department. And it's, as I said earlier, it's a public safety project. And so it's simply not the kind of project that you can continually defer. You can criticize how long it takes us to get things done. Lots of ways to look at this. But no one doubts the necessity to do this from a public safety perspective. So that's the first thing. No one in their right mind in public service tries, you know, deliberately to inconvenience people just for the fun of it, right? It's there's a reason for it. Number one, in terms of the gentleman from Bourne, he's right. The fare hike is too high when you're coming from the far reaches of the MBTA commuter rail system. We believe that sincerely. One of the things that we hope will happen sometime soon, with the introduction of the new fare collection, AFC, what's called AFC2, mm-hmm. Which has now been delayed, unfortunately, would be a rationalization of commuter rail fares so that it cannot be correct.
Rationalization, right? Meaning?
Meaning you have to make them fair for everybody and to create a fare structure so that it is not true that it's cheaper to drive and park than take commuter rail, right?
Okay.
If we're going to have a sustainable mobility system, mm-hmm. then that cannot be the right equation. We've got to make sure that those commuter rail fares are lower than the cost of driving and parking, even if that means that they're being subsidized, because there's a policy behind doing that.
Okay. Right? Now, I want to get to another caller in just a second. And Mary, I know you had something you wanted to say there, but I want you to say something else instead.
Okay. You got it.
You talked, you know, we're talking about this and the things that we need to do. And Mary, you said, hey, it's been 70 years, right? Mm-hmm. Well, shouldn't we have invested sooner then? I mean, why are we now at this point of kind of crazy safety crisis? Where was the investment along the way?
That's a really good question.
They've been
looking at deferred maintenance on so many of our transportation systems for years. I think in 2006 or 2007, the Transportation Finance Commission came up with a number of like 7 or 20 billion. What was the number in terms of the backlog of 20 billion in terms of backlog and maintenance. So people have been looking at it. They know it's there. But until people, it becomes crisis, it's hard to get the budgeting done, to get the effort put towards it. But they have been making improvements. It's not like it's been totally neglected, but there's been parts of the T that have been neglected. There's an issue with the T is that they have the funding for a lot of the capital projects that need to be done, mm-hmm. but getting the expertise in to get those projects completed has been an issue over the years.
Yeah.
They're making some headway there, but not as much as we would like to make sure that things like what happened over the past few days don't happen again.
With these derailments, the red line derailment and then
mm-hmm.
the green line derailment on Saturday. Let's listen to Ankita, and if I pronounce that wrong, I apologize. Ankita from Cambridge.
Hi. No, you pronounced it correctly.
Yay.
So I am a commuter. I commute by car right now from Central Square in Cambridge to the Seaport, which is about a 4-mile drive that usually takes me about 20 minutes. And I used to take the red line or bike in, but because of the unpredictability of the red line, which could take me anywhere from 40 minutes to an hour 15, I chose to drive. And that's largely because even though traffic can be really unpredictable, it's generally faster. And I can take conference calls or dial into meetings if I'm running late from my car, which I can't do on public transportation or while underground. So I think there's some level of sort of reliability, but also just convenience about being able to drive that I personally find ridiculous that I have to do. But it's the way that I can sort of balance my work and my life and commuting together.
All right, Jim. Jim wants to respond to you, Ankita.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah. Ankita, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
here.
Hi, Ankita. Can I ask you a question? Do you have a place to park, and does that cost you money?
It does. So I work in 121 Seaport. We have garage parking underneath. The company subsidizes 3/4 of it, so I pay $100 a month for parking.
All right. So that's part of the answer here to you. I'm wondering why you would not take transit from Central Square. And it highlights an issue, which is the availability of low-cost parking, right? A car is useless to everybody. A car is useless to you mm-hmm. unless you have a place to put it. And so one of the things we need to be thinking about in Massachusetts, especially in inner core communities, is the cost of parking. And
are you saying you want to make parking more expensive?
I do. I want to make parking more expensive because I want to charge people for their impacts on traffic congestion and their impacts on air quality and their impacts on quality of life. And I think we would use that money to improve public transportation and complete streets. We've got to face up to the reality that the ways we've been approaching mobility, the sort of mid-20th century auto-centric approaches to mobility, mm-hmm. don't respond to our needs or even, frankly, our values in the 21st century. And so the idea that parking is available and subsidized and free may be personally convenient, but it really doesn't help build the kind of sustainable mobility system that I think we all aspire to.
Okay, that's helpful. So we've got about a minute or so left. And what I want to do is, there is, again, I said this on our tea conversation yesterday, there is no single magic bullet. But we are here. This is where we are. We got to live with what's coming. So what's the most important next investment? And I'd love to hear from Mary first and then also you, Jim.
Well, I think a mitigation plan that's really transparent, bought off by signed off by MassDOT and the MBTA for these mega projects that are coming up, mm-hmm. really needs to happen so people know what they're in for and what the mitigation is going to be, and perhaps go to the federal government rather than to the toll payers to fund some of this stuff. It's been on the toll payers' backs for far too long,
mm-hmm.
and just trying to make sure that people know what is being done and not leave them in the dark. I mean, so many people, I live in Metro West, I'm a Framingham resident, so I take the Western Line all the time.
Yeah.
I talk to people at the baseball games and they have no idea that this is coming. So transparency, getting it out there, having more public meetings so people can get involved in the planning process of this, because they are the ones, like the woman from Ashland, that are really going to be impacted and deserve a seat at the table.
Okay, Jim, and quick comment from you.
So I agree with Mary. We need a strong mitigation package for the Worcester Line during construction on Alston. We also need, on the larger scale, I believe we need net new revenue so we can accelerate state of good repair and modernization work, and so we can complete some critical transit completion and connectivity projects. That would include connecting the Blue Line to the Red Line. It includes an early build West Station here at Alston Landing to facilitate those rail moves. And ultimately, it involves investing in a new, more robust intercity rail, regional rail system that's electrified, that's quick, that's fast, and that is the antidote to congestion on the roadways.
Okay, so transparency, strategy, and net new revenue. Jim Aloisi is a former state transportation secretary and Mass Turnpike board chairman. He's now a member of the Transit Matters Board and the principal of Trimont Consulting. Thanks for coming in, Jim.
Thanks again.
And Mary Connaughton, she's the director of government transparency at the Pioneer Institute and served on the Mass Turnpike Authority Board from 2005 to 2009. Thanks to you too, Mary.
Wonderful to be here, Tiziana.
Listeners, you can find a link to their op-ed on our website, RadioBoston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering, and this is Radio Boston.